Welcome back to Rockstock Channel. It is Wednesday, March 20th, 6:20 a.m. New York time, Sydney time. I think it's 9:30 for you, Amanda, the CFO of Atlantic Lithium. Neil, I think you're in Portugal, so your time zone is more favored, as is Rodney's in Mauritius. Neil is the chairman of Atlantic Lithium. We've had Atlantic on Rockstock Channel a number of times. I guess most recently, it was just a short snippet. In November, I was in London at the One-to-One conference, but we did a proper interview, I think, in late October. And I recently saw both of you at the PDAC. I attended a promotion in Ghana event, which we're going to flash up a picture of here. I forget all the people I was next to in that picture, but I tweeted about it. Thank you for giving me the names of those people, Amanda. But most importantly, I saw Neil present in a room, you know, filled with, you know, probably over 100 people. And he was presenting after a lot of successful mining operations in Ghana. I think AngloGold Ashanti, I forget who the other presenters were, but just for me to sit there and see and hear that Ghana is a very much, again, this was a promotion of investment in Ghana, in Canada, very well attended. It is a very mining friendly jurisdiction. We were reminded of this. Rodney's always talked about Ghana being the top three in Africa on the Fraser Institute, whereas some other lithium jurisdictions like Zimbabwe and DRC are in the bottom three. African spodumene alongside China lepidolite has been a significant story on the supply side. There aren't very many ways publicly to play African spodumene stories. You know, AVZ is in trading halt, Leo Lithium's in trading halt. I think there's Kodal Minerals, and then there's Atlantic Lithium. Just want to remind everybody, if you like this video, please like and subscribe and hit the notification bell to be reminded every time a Rockstock video comes about. We recently had Paul Graves, which inherited the Mount Catlin mine, the CEO of Atlantic Lithium actually managed that mine. So one of the fox ticks for Atlantic is they have one of the few people who know how to build and operate spodumene mines. Again, to remind you, if you're not already getting our lithium bill, we just published our Lucky Lithium to reflect the green on the RK Equity scoreboard and in connection with St. Patrick's Day. But if you're not already getting the lithium ion bull to your email box, please register your email at rkequity.com. And please follow Rodney and me on X at RodneyHooper13. I am at Lithium Ion Bull. And Atlantic Lithium is crazy active on X, both Amanda and Neil and Keith and Atlantic Lithium, as well as on LinkedIn. But Neil and Amanda, what are your handles?
I think I'm just Amanda Harsis. Yeah.
I'm all the chairman, yeah?
All the chairman.
All the chairman.
Okay. So we encourage you to follow Atlantic on X and LinkedIn. Okay. Atlantic, looking at the scoreboard year to date, is down 16% on a relative basis. That's actually quite good. I'm looking at some of your spodumene peers in Brazil, which I think are comparable. You know, Sigma's down 52%, Atlas is down 47%, Latin's down about 30%, and your partner Piedmont, as well as Sayona in Quebec, are down, you know, 48 and 43%. So much of last year, we were complaining, why were you so undervalued relatively? And it looks like, and why wouldn't you trade up? It looks like the market has traded down to you. A little bit after we interviewed you, you got a bid from your major shareholder, Assor, who owned, I think, 24% of the time. They bought a little bit more from Piedmont after that, but they also got a little bit diluted by your equity raise in December. But they had an outstanding bid for your company, I think, at 33p, which is above the 19.5p where it is today on the London AIM market. You're also traded on the ASX, ticker symbol A11, as well as the OTC ALLIF. And Amanda's going to talk about your fourth listing, you know, in Ghana, upcoming sometime in the not too distant future. But overall, your market cap is, I think, $140 million US dollars. and we've done a bit of the math, you essentially have, you know, economic interest of about 45%, assuming Piedmont, you know, fully funds and earns into their ownership and taking account to what the sovereign wealth fund of Ghana, you know, owns, you know, at parent and project level. And just remind us just the basic parameters of where you are, stage of development, size of the resource, expected production, cash costs. Neil, if you could start with that and then lay out some of the milestones, of which, you know, your partnering process for offtake is a significant one, but there are a few others that Amanda can go into the details of that. And then Rodney will ask a few questions as well.
Fine. Thank you very much, Howard. So in terms of the project, the stage of development is we completed DFS the middle of last year, and that was based on a resource of 35 million tons, 1.25. As we've commented before, we've worked in a very small part of our license area, so we expect to continue to grow that. And we put out some more drill results recently, which just show the potential of the property that continues to grow. In terms of the major steps and milestones we're going through at the moment, obviously, we are getting to the, we completed the mineral lease at the end of last October, which is a very important development. And as we go into next quarter, there are several major milestones which we'll be facing. Firstly, the ratification by Parliament of the agreement. Secondly, the GSE listing, which Amanda is working on as we speak. And indeed, completion of the offtake agreement, which you just referred, which Amanda can talk to a little bit as well. Just in terms of the project, that DFS, the numbers were very good. So as I always say, it's a bit of a star project, and then it's low capex and low opex. So you're looking at a capital requirement of 185 million. And obviously, as you pointed out before, Piedmont Lithium have the requirement to fund the bulk of that, with us funding the remainder. We have cash costs of $371 C1 cash costs, so very strong. Be able to survive both the bottom end of the market and enjoy the benefits of the higher end of the market, which is quite a volatile market for lithium, as I'm sure Rodney knows. And in general, in sustaining costs are around $675 too. The very strong economics overall. Next quarter, very important quarter for us. We are looking to actually get all the permitting together by Q3 of this year. So in Q3, we'll actually have completed all of that, and we will be looking to break ground on the project in Q4. We're looking at modular production, which is a lower level of production, but still significant for us, around the middle of next year. And indeed, the full plant being commissioned the year following, with steady state production of around 365,000 tons per annum. So a very significant mine in itself. As I've said before, what's great about this project is it is very well provided for an infrastructure. We're very fortunate to be on the coast in Ghana, 110 kilometers from a existing port facility for minerals handling. So we don't have to do anything on that front. We also have power running across the site. Not that we need much power, because it's a very simple mining operation, gravity circuit only. And we have all the benefits of operating in Ghana, which, as you pointed out before, is a fantastic mining jurisdiction. I was there last week with our staff. And so one of the great things about Ghana compared to some jurisdictions in Africa is you have a long pedigree of mining, a lot of highly experienced, trained and educated mining staff available to you. So we don't have to bring in expat staff either. So in terms of the risks, we see it as a relatively low risk operation, very favorable mining conditions, and will be in production just about as soon as possible. So next year, first production, and 2026 for our full production, which is obviously when we're expecting a significant recovery in the market.
Sure. So, I mean, you've covered a couple of them, but you had a very good announcement around some near surface intercepts that are outside of the existing 35 million ton resource. Your thoughts when this gets added in, is this going to extend life of mine? Can you increase the throughput? You know, what's the plan? And sort of a second one on that is, you know, are you liking what you're seeing to possibly, if you're allowed to say, get up to a 50 million ton resource at some point?
Good questions, both. So in the first place, obviously continuing good results outside of the existing mineral resource, which is important to us. And that will add into the resource. I will say, where are we spending our money today? Where is our biggest bang for buck? Well, it's definitively taking the product to production, because it gets us the cash flow. So we are continuing to do work on the project. It will add resource to the project, to the overall resource numbers. 50 million tons, in the medium to longer term, I think that's very, very feasible. And I think potentially could be more than that. We've only worked 5 kilometers from the original discovery, and we have a very large license area to work on. So I'm actually expecting the resource to continually grow. In terms of the immediate work we're doing and the adding to resource, some of that's going to work its way into the mine plan. I think it's more a question at the moment of extending the mine life rather than increasing the throughput. But obviously, if we make significant discovery, that may well change.
And on that, I don't know if we touched earlier. How are you looking on the cash position, and you know, going forward to getting to the key milestones and then kicking off to developing?
Amanda, right, do you want me to take that one? Yeah. So at the moment we have around $12 million in cash. We had a kind of $9 million Australian at the end of the year. We got the MIF investment in January, and obviously we continually have funding by Piedmont as well. So we're in a pretty good cash position at the moment. We only spend around probably $600,000 to $800,000 a month on our share of the exploration spend and study spend and some of the development costs. So that will kind of continue for quite a long period. But what we do have is the MIF local project level investment. That's $28 million that will be coming in the next few months. So we're kind of in the process of agreeing those contracts with MIF, and that will come in. So that kind of provides us with effectively the bulk of funding in the medium term. And then obviously we have our Piedmont agreement, and Piedmont sold fund the first $70 million of development. We've already hit the milestones on studies and exploration. So all of that spend is 50-50 shared going forward, and has been for the last year. So in our funding, we are, well funded at the moment. We do have the offtake agreement coming in as well. So that process is going really well. We've got 6 parties at the moment in this stage. We're finishing off site visits, and then we'll move to final bids and kind of choose our partner going forward in terms of having a customer for the product. And that's all working really, really well at the moment. We've got really engaged parties who, we think we're going to get a good customer in the next few months.
My understanding is that MIF has the right to participate in the competitive process of buying up to 40% of the spodumene concentrate produced at market prices. Is that correct?
I don't know if it's 40%. I can't quite remember that, but they definitely have the right to they are in the process and they're taking part.
And just following on from their investment and the government's free carry and so on, how involved is MIF on a day-to-day basis with the business?
So right now they're really engaged. We have, Edward is, sitting with us. They're helping us, doing the GSC listing and doing our investment and actually working together to move the project forward. So very engaged. The head of the stock exchange, which you met, Howard, in Toronto, is on MIF's investment board. So we're all kind of quite engaged together to move this forward. So, we're really pleased that they like their investment. We like having them on board. You've got educated people talking about project level. You have now a Ghanaian shareholder, and that's really important to us. The stock exchange listing will come up very soon. All the documentation's being done. We're just getting the final compliance approvals through the different agencies in Ghana. And what that is, it's a listing by invitation, so there'll be no offer of shares as part of that. But what it will mean is that investors in Ghana can actually buy shares, and the brokers are working now with our teams in both Australia and the UK to enable the purchase of shares and moving them to Ghana. And what's exciting for us is actually going to that new investor community, doing education. Obviously, we're the first lithium mine in Ghana. We'll be the first, explorer in Ghana. listed on the stock exchange. So, you know, these they're learnings from Ghana and learnings from us as well, but it's exciting to be part of that.
That's great. And then if you can just talk us through the mechanics of the ratification process and what's required and how long that takes. Is it a formality? Does it, you know, what is the sort of structure of that?
Yeah. So I think I don't think any mineral lease that's been approved at the ministerial level has ever not been approved by the parliament, but it is a process. So I believe the process that stands today is the CEO of the Minerals Commissioner effectively provides the paperwork to the minister. The minister takes that to cabinet. There is a parliamentary subcommittee that then sits to review the ratification. And then that the subcommittee takes it to parliament itself. So there is a process to be taken. So I meeting the Minerals Commissioner, CEO of the Minerals Commissioner last week, it was his intention to effectively take this to the minister this week for discussion. And assuming all well, we would imagine that sometime after Easter, the parliamentary subcommittee will meet to discuss and then it will be taken into parliament for ratification. So my expectation is that in the course of the next quarter, that will be complete. But in all fairness to the government, all the other permitting steps they've been doing in parallel. So full credit to the Minerals Commission there in the way that they've approached it so that they're not waiting for the ratification. They've been working through all the other steps at the same time with that intention of being able to effectively complete all permitting in Q3 and give us a license to operate so we can indeed break ground later in the year.
Okay, so you said I think you have 11 million in the bank. Is that Aussie dollars or is that pounds?
That's US dollars. We kind of, it's only in half year and full year that we go into Australian dollars. Everything else is in US.
Okay. So let's just talk US. So you have 11 million US, you're spending 600,000 to 800,000 a month, which I think you told me offline or whatever, you know, will get you through October, you know, other things being equal, but you are going to make a final investment decision, I guess. When do you make that if all things align perfectly?
So obviously the completion of the permitting is the key date here. So we would expect the ratification, the environmental and permitting to be complete. I mean, effectively we get the green light to, you know, a full license to operate from the government, which we expect to achieve, to be honest, around the mid-year point.
Yeah.
And that's really the key drawdown date. And as you pointed out before, we are due to receive on completion of the phase two investment from MIT around $28 million. And then they also provide ongoing funding during the build process, which is estimated around $11 million. And obviously, more importantly, in terms of the funding, the agreement with Piedmont, which is they're providing the first $70 million of all funding, and then all the remaining is shared amongst the three partners. So that would be ourselves, Piedmont, and indeed MIF into proportion to their interest. So we don't get drawn for very much money this year for sure. And I think it's really as you get to the middle of next year is that $70 million is exhausted, and we'll be using effectively funding which we're looking to take from the offtake process that we're using, which we're going to complete next quarter, we hope. So and the, you know, the interest in that offtake process has been very strong, which is very encouraging given that the market didn't perform very well at the beginning of the year. But we have six groups there, a mix of chemical converters and indeed traders, both Western and Asian. And those parties have been working diligently with us, and a lot of enthusiasm. I was with one of the groups last week in country, and I'm very impressed with the enthusiasm they have for actually securing that offtake and indeed the project that we have.
Jumping in here from the editing room to tell you about Lithium Royalty Corp. Lithium Royalty Corp is at the center of a global energy transition and manages a globally diversified portfolio of lithium-focused royalties in electrification and decarbonization. With 32 royalties on 29 higher-grade, lower-cost projects, from exploration to production, LIRC covers all the bases with well-managed risk, ESG considerations, and a scalable royalty structure. Lithium Royalty Corp is traded on the Toronto Stock Exchange, ticker symbol LIRC. To find out more, visit lithiumroyaltycorp.com. pilbara.com. Okay, well, we've seen, Pilbara just expand their offtake with three Chinese parties. I think it was Ganfeng, Chengxin, and Yahua. There was no money attached, but Pilbara didn't need money. But it does reflect that Chinese offtakers are very interested in high quality spodumene resources, not just like lepidolite, or in contrast to lepidolite. And we saw late last year, Atlas Lithium signed on as well with, I think, Yahua and Chengxin, who wrote $50 million check, $10 million at parent level, and I think $40 million prepay. You've seen Glencore active with $400 million to Eramet and possibly up to $100 million for Galan Lithium. You mentioned traders. Obviously, you're not going to tell us any of the names of the parties that are in there, but I'm just reflecting from a market, the perspective, what's there. Hopefully GM will fund LAC now that LAC is getting, $2.25 billion, from the U.S. government. But what is the quantum of, so you have Piedmont, you have MIF, and then you have your share. Is your share going to be fully covered by this prepay, process, or is there any risk that, you'll have to raise some parent level equity?
No. So at the moment, at the $185 million for the development expenditure, our share is $38 million. So the ask of the prepayment is 70 to 100 million facility, and we'll only draw that down as and when required. We won't kind of have that and sit with cash in the bank. So there will be a facility that we can use. So we would be more than covered by that prepayment facility. We also have, 14, half of the MIF money will also be able to be used for our expenditure as well. We obviously are not just covering development expenditure, we're covering exploration and other spend as well in Ghana. So we do have more than the 185, but we're well and truly covered by these financing arrangements that we're putting up in place for ourselves. So we are still kind of exploring elsewhere and around the world. And, that is, we treat this as a lawyer's paying for a lawyer. So in terms of this prepayment facility, this is for the Ewoyaa project level.
Ewoyaa project level. Okay. But it's going to be more than fully funded if you only need $35 million and you get $70 million. So that would be there in case of any cost overruns.
Overruns, working capital. We continue to, more resource, we're doing more work around the GMS, and we're constantly looking to improve what we're doing. So, this will, if there's any additional expenditure, then we'll be covered. If there's working capital, we'll be covered. It gives us optionality, so some things we may want to, pay outright rather than lease. There's lots of different, spend at the moment that we have a methodology and a way to get to 185, but this just gives us optionality as we move forward.
What is the future of Atlantic Lithium beyond Ewoyaa?
So three things I think we can draw out there. The initial project there, as we've said, is a tiny part of our overall license area in Ghana. There is very good potential through that license area, and indeed some known spodumene occurrences that we have yet to work on. So we see that there's a lot of upside, as we were discussing with Rodney earlier, in terms of that license area alone. But we're not content just with that. We do look beyond that in Ghana. So we have a existing program of analysis of other properties in Ghana to see what else might be interesting to work on. So we're looking at that continually. And we actually look a stage further. And obviously, as I said before, we are focusing our spend primarily on taking this project to production, but we continually look at other projects outside of Ghana itself. So in the first place, within Africa, because obviously we have a great deal of expertise there, but not limiting ourselves to that. We're also looking at Latin America potential projects as well. So we don't spend a great deal of money on this point of time, but we do want to look at seeing whether we can identify another Ewoyaa, if you like, out there, which would be our second project in the future. So you can't start early enough on these things. So we're out there looking today to see if we can find Ewoyaa too.
Okay, we're still very in early days in the lithium market, development market. There aren't that many companies that have, gone through the path to actually get into production. Obviously, you need to get that under your belt, but I think that you could be a very interesting partner, and the skills to some of the early stage exploration, not just in Africa, but, there's Quebec, as you said, Brazil. So that's interesting that you're thinking about those things. Neil, you have been around with this company from inception, right? I think that they came out of one of our...
I'm now in my 10th year.
Yeah, my 10th year. So it was you, and I do want to pay tribute to Vince Mascolo, who passed away tragically at the age of 53, which really hit home to me, like literally 2 years and like 2 weeks ago. Still sticks with me, and I know he's smiling, as we've said before, but you and him built this, originally. Iron Ridge Resources was supposed to be a iron ore company, and then you found lithium. But you've taken this from a grassroots exploration project, so there's a lot of, I think, grassroots opportunities out there that certainly could benefit from your success, exploration wise and through the path to development. You've also been one of keep it simple, stupid people, keep it spodumene stupid, but one of our mantras, apart from go long what China is short, is insider buying is a very positive market signal. And in this lithium market crash over the past year, there are very few companies where we're actually seeing on-market buying of any type. And we have seen you, Neil, and you, Amanda, on the tape repeatedly. Why?
Why? Well, fundamentally, I believe in what we're doing. So it's a great project. And I've worked in the mineral industry for over 25 years. And this is a remarkable opportunity. And as you said there previously, this was a grassroots. We went out there to look for more projects. We looked at iron ore. We weren't successful in that. We went out there to look for new opportunities. And this is just a very straightforward project. I've used these words before. And in our business, they don't come around very often. The economics are compelling. The relative risks of taking a project of this nature production are relatively low to a lot of things that I've worked on. Though I've spent, I think, just about all my salary in the last year and buying shares. I think Amanda and I both are well into at least over the million Aussie dollar each number in the last 12 months, and we kept buying. Obviously, we're often restricted from buying because directors are always restricted for a million reasons. But when we've had the opportunity and we're allowed to do it, we've gone in and bought shares. And I, it's a value opportunity. It's one of the best things I've got in my portfolio. So even if I stand back and look at other things I do, I say, well, I can see clear upside in value for buying shares at, 20 pence, or, sub 40 cents, Australian. You can see, good potential there in a relatively short period of time to actually see a 100% uplift. So very happy to be an investor in Atlantic. I'm a believer.
Yeah, same here. It's rare you get the opportunity to, both work, as an executive director and, deliver what you need to deliver and then, to invest as well. I came into this story only not 4 years ago. So, I haven't had the opportunity along the way to kind of get cheaper shares. So, I've been a buyer because I believe in, the company and the project.
I think I saw some article that your average price is like 28p, Neil. That was a couple of weeks
ago. I did a big purchase last week. Amanda's a much better buyer than I am. I'm sort of like, okay, I'll just buy some shares. So she's always like, I always got a better price than you. But I bought a lot of shares. Most of the shares I bought last year, I think, were at 28 pence per share. But lots of upside to be had. So I'm not concerned.
Okay. Well, the Assor bid was at 33. So could you, you were saying, Neil, you've been with 10 years of the project. How long has Assor been involved with the project and what's the nature of that relationship? And, you know, Piedmont sold a bit to Assor. I think that came as a little bit of a surprise to you. So what's the, like in your share structure, one of the reasons I think you're, you were relatively undervalued is that you do have very significant shareholders in your capital structure. And I guess you are takeoverable by Assor, but, by someone else, like, I don't know. So could just help us, you know, are they going to bid again? You know, what's the, what do you think?
It's a very good question. So, look, they came forward with an offer last year, which was a very significant premium to the market, at 33 pence per share, which we said no to, and they reiterated at 33 pence per share. And obviously a good offer relative to the price of shares. As you pointed out, they consistently traded around the 20p mark. So 33 pence is a considerable premium. We obviously have to look at that as directors with our advisors and look at the fundamental value of the project. And we determined at that time that if we didn't feel it was enough based on the metrics that we were given as directors, will they bid again? They may, that's up to them. Obviously they've been big supporters of the project, and going back to your question, they have been involved in this project as long as I have. So they've been involved in this company as long as I have. So they are also in their 10th year. And they've been a big supporter of the company through, you know, the good and the bad years. So I've really appreciated that. Moreover, you know, they are a very significant mining house running a number of mining operations. And so we came into this as a small explorer. So we've been able to draw upon their knowledge and draw upon their technical ability. I was talking to one of their team yesterday. And it's been great to have that support as we've gone along. Do they have a position of negative control? Well, you could argue so. You could also argue against, because it still be possible to take over the company. Would somebody try with somebody earning 27%? Well, they might be put off from doing so, but you could actually get control of the company. Will they bid again? Well, it'd be very interesting. I mean, you've got major milestones coming up, which are significant de-risking events for a potential acquirer. So obviously these permitting steps are a very rapid de-risking of the project in the next couple of months. So any potential acquirer, be it them, be it another party, I'm sure will be watching that, because that's obviously from their point of view, very significant in terms of managing their own risk. So it's very possible that somebody comes forward. But what I will reiterate is that, you know, the approach that we take to this is that the best way of creating value is taking the project to production. If someone comes along and offers a great price in the meantime, I'm sure the directors will consider it. And if it's the price is right, they'll accept it. But we don't run the company on that basis. We run the company on the basis that we are taking to production, and that's the way that we're going to create value.
Right. Okay. Well, I don't know Assor well, but you're saying they're a big mining house. I'm just wondering if, like, they're not like a motivated seller. Like in Sigma's case, it looks like it's a private equity group. They have a 5 or 10 year life, mm-hmm. and then they're going to sell an asset. In Assor's case, it looks like, you know, they could run this mine. They're comfortable in Africa. I think they're, yes. I don't know what other mines yes. they're in. Like they could just own this privately and just run it for cash flow. They, you know,
absolutely. They are effectively a multi-generational privately run company running a number of African mining projects already. They also have some very significant investments in the same similar size in other projects in Africa as well. So, yes, I mean, they could absolutely acquire this and run it for cash flow. And as we've said, we have a 12-year mine life, but our expectation of Ewoyaa is that mine life and indeed the resources and reserves will continue to grow because we have so much project area to work on.
Would an acquisition like kind of confuse your permitting and ratification process? Like if all of a sudden they came tomorrow and took you over, while you're getting parliamentary approval, would that be, is that a consideration at all in their thinking or in your dialogue?
It could be. I mean, I'm not in a position to speak for them, but regardless of whether it's Assor or someone else, if you are a potential acquirer within your project, you will be looking at to what extent has been de-risked in respect to permitting. So obviously once you've got a license to operate, then you effectively de-risk that permitting process for the potential acquirer. And so arguably it has more value to them. So yes, I'm sure it would factor into the consideration of any potential acquirer where you are in terms of permitting. I think that's a key matter. We've seen permitting go awry in projects around the world, in other minerals. I think we've been very fortunate. The government has been very proactive in its engagement with us to ensure that we actually get to permitting. Ghana's interest is that this mine gets to production, and that's key to Ghana and it's key to us. So, that's a common objective that we're both completing.
And I saw that in the presentation at PDAC, they made some comments about they want to replicate in lithium all the success they've had in gold, which is many, 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 many mines. So they've got to get this one, the first one right, and there are other lithium projects there. So if they don't get it right, then it's not going to be gold, right? So that it is, I felt very comfortable based on that. So it's a catalyst rich next couple of months here. Like this is, nothing's a no-brainer ever until it's done, but the market is watching very closely for that ratification for sure. But that would seem to be a potential re-rate opportunity on getting that formally approved, as is announcing a specific partner for offtake with a certain quantum. Those two things are huge, very definable, de-risking milestones in the near term. So it's going to be exciting couple of months. Just want to remind everybody, we are shareholders and advisors to Atlantic Lithium. Nothing we are saying here is financial advice, but we are drinking the Atlantic Kool-Aid and we're putting out these videos on behalf of our clients in part to, just further educate why it's a good story and why it's, worthy of your additional research. With that, I want to thank Neil and Amanda. I don't have any more questions unless there's any final thing that you have to, that we missed.
I think you summarized it very nicely there, Howard. As I say, it's going to be a very exciting, well, it's already a very exciting year for us, but the next quarter as we get to the full permitting, as it were, and then breaking ground later in the year, all these steps in terms of the permitting and indeed actually getting the operations aligned so that we can break ground by the end of the year is going to be our most exciting year yet. Let's say 10 years in there with Atlantic Lithium, but this is the big year for us.
Okay. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you.
We'll speak soon.
Thank you.
Bye now.